Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And what a show we have lined up for you this week. Sebastian, one of our featured guests, our special guest today, is none other than your mum.
My actual mom or just a generic Sebastian?
Your mom is so special.
How special is she?
She's on our show.
Oh!
That was a really bad your mama joke. We're also joined by our incredible friend, Jess, and Glenn, the station manager over at CFUV in Victoria, BC, who will talk about syndicating the program. Lot to get through in the show a little later. Sebastian, I want to talk to you about anal swabs.
Oh my.
Sebastian, in China, they are rolling out a program where they're going to be doing all sorts of swabbing, the nasal swab, the blood test. And the idea is that they're trying to make very clear, like no categorically, whether or not somebody has COVID-19 ahead of the Lunar New Year.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Lunar New Year being, like, having actually lived in China, I can tell you, Lunar New Year, like, society stops. It's like the gap between Christmas and New Year's. It's a very big deal.
Yeah, yes. It's huge. And there is a lot of travel, of people going home to see family. Yes. So they want to make sure that the folks traveling around, they do or they do not have COVID. Right. And one of the most effective things that the Chinese Communist Party has discovered is that anal swabs, the swabbing of the anal gland, is apparently a very effective tool of identifying whether or not you have COVID-19.
I have to correct you on two places. First of all, it's not the Chinese Communist Party. It's medical scientists in China. And secondly, humans don't have an anal gland. That's for skunks. So medical scientists in China. And by the way, this is confirmed in other countries in the rest of the world. Anal swabbing is about as effective as nasal swabbing. And the main thing is that I don't know if you've ever had the nasal swab done. Have you had it done?
No, but it's been described as somebody poking the back, like the inside of your brain. It's not an experience I'm looking forward to.
The swab goes in about 17 inches. Like, it goes past the back of your skull, the depth that it feels like it's going. Whereas the anal swab, which is not necessarily any better in terms of, like, keeping one's modest, but definitely in terms of, like, not suffering from having it poke between the fine bones in your nose, definitely less unpleasant, although probably more embarrassing.
According to the deputy director of Beijing's Yuan Hospital, Mr. Li Tongzhang, he said, this has been translated by the Star Observer, if we add anal swab testing, it can raise our rate of identifying infected patients. Of course, considering that anal swabs is not as convenient as swabs, at the moment, only key groups in quarantine will receive both. Now, it's interesting because I know that in Ottawa, for example, and across Canada, people are testing the sewage systems because they're testing for COVID-19 rates in fecal matter.
Yep.
So it's clearly there. And if you remember correctly, many months ago, we were talking about how COVID-19 was spotted in semen. Like, it seems to get around the body. You know, would you opt for a throat swab or an anal swab if given the choice?
Well, nasal swab, not throat swab. Throat swab is different. But I would like to correct the official, because he said it's less inconvenient. I would like to say that the nasal swab and the anal swab are different flavors of inconvenience.
Different flavors of inconvenience.
They're about the same, but I would say that they're different flavors of inconvenient, you know? As for which one I would prefer, I mean, I'm kind of indifferent. I have chronic rhinitis. As you know, I have many health problems. I would probably prefer a swab up my butt. Just because of the number of times that I've had various accidents, and the my nose has been smashed multiple times, and I don't want to make it worse. So the anal swab.
You would opt for an anal swab.
Yeah, and it's got nothing to do with being gay or butt plugs or anal sex or any kind of those stereotypes. It's more to do with the fact that I've had problems. The other thing, like, there's scientific information about that. COVID attacks all sorts of weird tissues.
According to coverage, some folks in China were concerned about the embarrassment that would be caused by anal testing for those who are in quarantine. But others have commented, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And if that's the most effective way of proving whether or not you have COVID-19 to get out of quarantine, then you got to pucker up. Others have noted that China has not made anal swabs mandatory. It will be optional. It'll be for those who are already in quarantine due to other factors that maybe put them at risk. And this is just a methodology for testing whether or not they have COVID-19. Before we dive into the meat and potatoes of today's show, I'm going to go from Chinese anal swabs and talk about the Norwegian Data Protection Authority.
I mean, it's global anal swabs. We're all going to do it eventually. Come
Absolutely.
On.
So the Norwegian Data Protection Authority has revealed that they have fined Grindr 100 million Norwegian kroner. It is the largest fine they have ever issued. It's about 10% of Grindr's global income or global revenues. And it's as a result of the very severe breach of data protection by Grindr. Mm-hmm. For our listeners who may not be aware, Grindr is a gay male dating app. I use dating here in air quotes.
They market themselves as a social app.
Well, those who use it become intimately social in a short space of time. It works out to be about 11 million US was the fine levied against them. It's one of the largest in the world. And what they found was that Grindr was essentially passing along IP addresses, advertising IDs, exact GPS data, the age, gender, and tagging them as whether or not they're LGBT, for example, to advertisers. It's a huge breach of individual private data.
In the West, that's no big deal, but there are still parts in the world where, like, if all you need to find all your Twitter advertisers, I mean, all your, particularly gay, but sometimes trans gay or bisexual men within a given population, is to just buy ad space on Grindr. Now you've got some shady governments who can put in an advertisement about literally anything, and now they have your data. Like this is not great. This is really bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's a concern for countries like Qatar and Pakistan, where the app is available and homosexuality is criminalized. Yeah. It is absolutely concerning. According to an interview with the New York Times, Grindr said that they had obtained valid legal consent from all of its European users on multiple occasions. That essentially boils down to its European users had clicked that they agree to the terms and conditions. Mm. And as anyone who has ever agreed to terms and conditions, I can assure you, no one's ever read that. But it's concerning that in Norway, at least, they weren't buying it. They weren't buying this at all. And Grindr has been slapped with one of the largest fines in European history for data protection breaches.
So people are very concerned about this. But even beyond that, just, I don't know, Grindr is, if you don't live in a metropolitan center, you should probably not be on there. I don't want to tell you what to do with your life. That's not my speed. But like, if you don't live in a metropolitan center in an Anglosphere country, it might be dangerous for you at this point in time. And you might want to look for other apps that do take your security and personal privacy seriously. Yeah.
We're going to jump to our first song. This is Girl. It's the debut album from Lisa out of Toronto. I love the track. It's a great, great listen. After this, we have our interview with your mum.
My mum.
And Jess. And then later on, we'll be closing out the show with Glenn. I've been Luke Smith, and we'll be back just after this.
I know your opinion of yourself is low. You think you're dirt, but you shine like gold. There's nobody like you. Carried away. ways you might to change my mind. I know the truth. It's not hard to love.
And welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we are joined by, as our regular listeners know, we have decided with much affection to call our super fans Sebastian's mum. We have one of our super fans, Jess, who has joined us today. Thank you so much, Jess. Folks may recognize Jess from having lost miserably at the Big Gay Quiz of the Year. How are you doing today?
Still licking my wounds, but I'm doing well.
And now I am thrilled to introduce to our listeners the OG, the original, the indisputed, actual Sebastian's mum. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, one and all.
So, Sebastian, did you ever expect that your mum would be joining us on one of these episodes?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm kind of glad that you were able to join us, Lynn, because we just hang out in a small room chatting to each other. And it always startles me when people recall conversations that we've had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone quite has you beat, Lynn, in terms of the devoted listener.
So, okay. Actually, one of the main reasons I listen is because it reminds me of when we lived together as threesome. And it's like when I would come home and have conversations. So it's kind of listening to it is like I'm there, except I'm not conversing back in a weird way.
We had a listener in Vancouver describe it once as it's like being in a bar and overhearing a conversation next to you. Is that a good description of how you think it sounds?
Mm-hmm. On occasion, I think so, but not always.
Yeah, sometimes you put on your news voice and we actually do the news. We do on occasion act professionally, but...
I would be astonished if I went into a bar and somebody next to me went, hello and welcome to the third bar stool. I'm having a gin and tonic. 200 episodes, and we've been doing it for much longer than that. But I am kind of curious, looking back at a mountain of material, what do you think of the show over the last 200 episodes? What are your thoughts on where it's gone in the last 200 episodes?
I think it's grown a lot. The material that you guys are looking for is much more extensive. The musical groups that you look to are... of course, because we've never heard of the bulk of them.
I was actually going to ask, the 200 episode, is that pre-Velvet Studio or?
That's just CanQueer.
It's just CanQueer. Yeah.
Wow.
But I mean, it would take somebody 8 days to listen through all of the shows. I think having done the show as long as we have and sort of dipped our toes into lots of different pies, or fingers. Nobody puts toes in pies. Dipping our... who puts fingers? No, keep all digits out of pies. But, we dip our toes into different waters. That it does give us a sense of where things might go. This is when we talked about it last week, and this is when we talked about it last month. And
actually, I have thoughts about that have occurred to me recently. So when I was in high school, there came a point where I realized the more I learned about history, the more... often I would say to myself, oh god damn it, it's 1969 again. Like 68, 69, so many things happened. It was ridiculous. Not just politically, but also things like, technology and stuff to do with computers, Woodstock, whole genres of music invented in that 3-year period, especially 69. And it really seemed like, and I even remember asking my mom at the time, what the hell was it like to be alive at 69? You were young, very young then, but still, I remember you said like nobody realized half of it until like 10 years later when like documentaries started coming out. Like nobody knew about Woodstock until much later, unless you were there.
I don't believe you, Sebastian. How could your mother have remembered 1969? She must have just been a wee sparkle in her mother's eye.
Jesus. I was 13.
But I was actually thinking that like current year is sort of another 1969 where there's so many things happening where like the progress that's happening in entertainment, like if you were to say like, you know, that 69 was really 68, 69, 70, some weird things have been happening in TV lately where people are now willing to accept the fact that watching audiences are intelligent and we can make intelligent TV, and TV's changed very much over the past year. Movies have changed. Obviously, there's been a few political bugaboos that people are not going to forget for a while. And then, of course, you know, the lockdown, that this is sort of like, these are the interesting times that people are going to be talking about. And like 15 years from now, people are going to be like, so where were you when this style of music was first invented? And you'll be like, I didn't hear about it until 4 years later. So like, I'm just assuming, given what I've read about specifically 1969, that this year, there's probably like an entirely new movement of music or an entirely new style of whatever, if history does tend to repeat itself, which it sometimes does.
I was reading the Economist's The Year in 2021, which is their sort of predictions for the next 12 months.
Okay.
But one of the things that stuck out to me was that people were talking about how there's not much belief that we'll go back to the sort of pre-COVID way of living.
Yeah.
You know, travel is going to be much more restrictive. People are going to think more carefully about going into spaces with lots of people. And that makes me think, are we ever going to see Pride Parade like we did in 2019? Was 2019 peak parade?
People because, were talking, you know, about retiring those for a while, though, for a list of reasons. They're expensive. They rely on corporate sponsorship. They rely on big business. And a lot of people wanted to be more grassroots. The fact that like Toronto had an average attendance of what, like almost
a million and a half. Yeah.
Like the same number of people who lived in Toronto were there, but it was mostly tourists. And people were just saying like, this is no longer a community event. The community does not have an opportunity to celebrate itself because it got too big. And I think that this is kind of a hard reset on some of that.
I think there's going to be a little bit of both. I think there some things are going to come back. I think you're wrong, Luke. I do think people are going to take vacations just like they always have. But when it comes to Pride parades, I think that may have some rethinking. If only because, like Sebastian said, the Toronto one, for example, was getting ridiculously huge.
Cities like that it's huge because they can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, but I think people are going to be a bit gun shy. You know, I think there's also going to be a push towards going more grassroots. People don't want the giant TD float parade sponsored stage. You know what I mean? I think there's going to be a bit of a move away from that.
Yeah, actually, Jess, I mean, thank you for being the cynic in the room. And I mean that.
Sorry.
No, but it's true. Like part of the reason why some of the Pride events got so inflated was because the city basically tax revenue in it. It was kind of a cynical approach that.
Dollar signs in their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned about the cynic in the room, Sebastian, because I wonder.
It's usually me.
Yeah, it's usually you. And I kind of wonder if that comes across to Jess and Sebastian's mum. You know, do you think when you're listening, oh, Sebastian's either being a dick or he's the devil's advocate or, you know what I mean? Because we have frequently disagreed. You know, how does that come across when you're listening?
Sebastian, how does Sebastian come across? Argumentative, like a smarty pants, argumentative. Fortunately, you're a friend.
Yeah, now you're told by your mother now, Sebastian, you've got to be nice.
Why? I get it from her. What are you talking about? I mean, part of it is just my part, when I see things where everybody is just agreeing with each other, it just, something about it feels like an echo. Like, I don't know how many times we've had on-screen arguments, not on-screen, but on,
like, recording, on mic. Yeah.
On mic.
But I think that's important for discourse. Like, you can't have both of you shilling the same thing. Otherwise, why even talk about it?
Yeah, and there's other times when I agree with him on mic, and then the mic goes off, and I'm like, well, actually.
But I mean, it's not just in the conversation, because, you know, it made me think of that small town in New Brunswick, tiny village, Chipman, New Brunswick, it was. And they raised a pride flag, a straight pride flag.
Yeah.
And it's because they just didn't know.
I was pretty forgetting of that.
Nobody Googled it. They should have Googled it. But yeah, you know, do you have a policy of Googling every flag you come across? There's a certain amount of benefit of the doubt. And actually, as it happens, two of the founders of Straight Pride were recently arrested by the FBI for the insurrection at the Capitol. So really great role models. You know, there are a lot of gay people and also liberal leftist gay people who, you know, take immediate offense at the smallest thing and sort of blow it up out of proportion. And we see tons of media coverage of, oh my God, I can't believe somebody said such a thing, or no one gives anybody the benefit of the doubt. And I think, you know, I hope that our show does that to some degree.
What I think your show does, for me at least, you introduce different elements of GLBTQ that I have no knowledge of, that I find interesting. First of all, because of the subject material. Second of all, because where it's coming from, which, you know, it exemplifies that it's worldwide. So for me, I like hearing the little news items that you guys do. And then when you say you'll follow it up and you do follow it up, then it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's my thing.
So Can Queer, I mean, I don't know what 200 episodes works out as. That's what, 4 years? Is that 4 years worth of radio almost?
Approximately, yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time. I feel like we hit a bit of a lull with the show. And I do occasionally wonder, you know, we're going for 200 episodes. Surely we have covered all gay things that there are to cover in 8 days worth of conversation.
Well, how do you cover everything if things keep happening?
Yeah.
That's true.
It's always going to be news. What are you talking about?
So 10 years ago, when we started, there was definitely stuff happening all the time. There was, you know, civil rights cases, human rights cases, there's stuff in culture and arts. And first of all, it's a slow year. And secondly, at least in the Anglosphere, the civil rights and human rights battles are almost finished. Obviously, there's a few cases to do with gender expression and trans rights, but broadly speaking, the amount of news coming out every week is slowing down. So we have had conversations many, many times about dropping down to a half an hour format, but I don't think we ever talked about quitting.
Oh no, don't quit. Who told me about that little town out west that has one gay person and they had the gay parade? No, they ran up the flag. That was it.
It's funny you mentioned that, because in the news last week, and of course I did the interviews around the US political transition last week, so we didn't get to cover it. But in the news last week, there is this town of Mission, British Columbia, where this young trans girl, this 14-year-old trans girl, was viciously attacked by two girls in her middle school. All of it was caught on video. The video was passed around students in the school, and it was quite a horrific incident. But what happened next is really what will make your heart bleed, because so many people in the town of Mission, British Columbia, were just incensed and wanted to show their support for this little 14-year-old trans girl, that they did a sort of driving rally, which is very COVID safe, a sort of driving rally, you know, through the town. And more than 1,000 people attended this little thing. That's more people than in Mission, British Columbia. Like, there were more cars there than could fit physically in the town, all showing their support for this little 14-year-old girl. All in all, it's like, wow, you know, first of all, it's horrific that happened, but really it is quite powerful to see that this tiny community in the, you know, it's a rural community in BC, like they really came out for this 14-year-old. I don't know about you, Sebastian, but 4 years ago when we started this, would you have expected the same thing for a tiny backwater town in British Columbia? Would you have expected thousands of people to come in a drive-through rally if somebody got attacked for being trans?
Well, not the drive thing, because the drive-through thing is very COVID era, but I think I could have seen this coming eventually, because, well, just thinking about like there was that episode of Letterkenny. Like, Letterkenny is very Canadian. And there was a couple episodes where people from the next town over, you know, degens from up north, were picking on their one, I don't want to call him friend, but there was a guy in their friend of circles, and he was like a very eccentric, obviously gay minister. And they were like, no, you don't get to pick on him. He's ours. You know, we pick on him because he's our friend, but outsiders don't get to pick on him. And that sort of like small town, like maybe they're weird, but there are weirdo. Like there's that lady with the pet chicken in Ancaster that everybody knows about. I could see that side of the countryside being emphasized as time goes on and people are more accepting and more embracing of human rights. And I think it's just an issue of like, it's a very like in-group, out-group thing. And now LGBT people are now being accepted into the in-group, into the, you know, nobody picks on them but us kind of thing.
The other thing that our show does, or that I hope our show does, is educational. I feel like we try and educate. And there was another example from this week, which I'm going to touch on, which poppers. Is where, yes, we did explain poppers. I think we could have done a better job, but it was not that bad.
I had to think about it.
It's complicated, yeah.
But the case I had in mind was from Newfoundland. There was a couple in a cabin in Hatchet Grove in Newfoundland, in the East Coast. This guy comes out dropping homophobic slurs. I think he was a cousin of the man and his partner who was being shot at. And the guy had a gun and he's shooting at them in their cabin. They were very upset that this man was not charged with a hate crime. And then, of course, the CBC has to spend an entire article explaining why it wasn't a hate crime, because, of course, hate crimes are inciting genocide, hate speech. Any crime can be hate motivated, and that can apply to sentencing. So I feel like even today that there is a role for our show to play and be like, yeah, this is ridiculous. This is unacceptable. And this certainly shows that this man was hoping that gay folks, the way I see it, when people are doing that, they're a menace to society. If they're not just a menace to a person, but a menace to all society, then you throw a book at them. And that's how hate crime, you know, sentencing works. Jess and Sebastian's mom, what do you think of our role in terms of the education that we bring to the table? I'll let Jess go first.
I think you do a really good job of covering things that isn't done in the mainstream. I mean, I'm not actively seeking out LGBT news as much as I could, but it's also, I do read the news and I only hear stuff from you guys that I don't find in the news because it's not there, because it's underrepresented. So represented, kind of like how I get my info, to be honest, because otherwise a lot of it just kind of gets shuffled under the rug. And I mean, I don't think I would have heard about Legs Up, which is now one of my favorite things. So.
That was great. That was, I think that has to be one of my favorite stories, the Legs Up party.
That's my new favorite phrase. So
yeah. I remember years ago, Jon Stewart, back when he was still doing The Tonight Show, he found out that he was America's number one source of news. He actually went on in front of camera and said, please, please, please find secondary sources. Like, if you hear about something from me for the first time, that's fine, but please read the news. Don't just stop at me. I'm just a comedian. And he was like doing the thing where he was staring into the camera, like authentically imploring, like, I'm just a drunk idiot. Stop listening to me. I feel kind of like that right now.
Like I said earlier, I've learned a lot from you guys. Is it stuff I needed to learn? I don't know. But here's what I know. It's important to you, and that makes it important to me.
That's I'm gonna put that on a poster. I learned lots of stuff from you. Is it stuff I need to know? I don't know.
So you know, there's an old house track, put your hands up for Detroit. Should we have a poster that says put your legs up for Camp?
there.
I love it. So I get the sense then that there's definitely a continued need for our program. You know, I get the sense that 200 episodes in, at least from our two biggest fans, I don't know if it's a biased survey, but at least from you two folks, that it seems like carrying on is what we should be doing.
Oh, definitely.
There's something that corporate models do sometimes, which is called a retrospective. So if we take this as a formalized retrospective, and we've now covered the what are you doing well, the next step would be what are the rooms.
So Lynn, where do you think we can improve?
That's really tough. I do like when you have interviews with different people, and you've had a decent variety of people on the show, both paid and volunteer positions that they hold. And that adds some interest, at least for me. I particularly like hearing about other parts of the country, although Manitoba, I've noticed, is strangely absent a lot of times. I do think interviews are interesting, but you have to have someone willing to be interviewed, and of course, a topic. So I can see where that can be an issue.
What about Jess?
I have to agree with Sebastian's mom. I do like you'd have more people with, like, very specific kinds of guests as well, like sexual education or like people that like. And I know that's just now is an awful time to even try to do stuff like that, because good luck finding people from your bedroom, Sebastian.
The irony is that now that the online game has changed, in some ways it's harder, in many ways it's easier, because we can record online conversations now.
You know, and that's one of the things that has always struck me. And I'll talk about it later in the conversation with Glenn. But for folks listening who are thinking, these two white gay guys of a certain age, they're doing a good job, but maybe I can do something new, I could do something different. I want the people listening to know that it isn't, I'm not going to try and undersell the work we do, but it isn't particularly difficult to get an interview. Mm. People who you think are sort of unattainable, you know, doctors in XYZ, you know, people in charge of national organizations, etc., they're often quite happy to chat with us on various topics. People are more available than one would think, and are always happy to talk about that which they're passionate about, which they're motivated to speak on. So yeah, I just hope that more folks will come forward and create.
You also have to remember, you guys have been around for a little bit, and there are kids just coming out, or kids that are questioning. Are they listening to you? Quite possibly, because there are people who may not have anyone that they can talk to. They may be looking to you for information that they don't feel comfortable asking anyone locally. We don't know, but to be able to provide that for them.
But it makes me think of what motivated us all those years ago, you know, and I think a lot of this is just making us seem old, and to the Zoomers listening, maybe we are. If folks cast their mind back to the It Gets Better phenomena that, you know, with Dan Savage, that sort of erupted all over the Western world, where everyone, a lot of gay people who had got out of, you know, their small towns, or they got out of abusive situations, people who had some success were like, look, you know, it gets better. And I can say over the past 4 years, with our bird's eye view on Canada, Canada has certainly improved in the four years of Can Queer that we've been reporting on it. Like, that is absolutely certain. But when we first started out 4 years ago, we did it because in Ottawa, the young Jamie Hubley, the son of an Ottawa councillor, took his own life, and it really shook the city to its core that we suddenly found ourselves in the middle of this international wave of teen suicides related to homophobia. And I remember, Sebastian, you know, me and you talking about, you know, can we be that voice on the radio, that resource that someone can tune into and know that at least on Tuesday at 2 p.m. or Saturday at noon or Thursday at 9 p.m., that there is somebody there. That was our original inspiration. How do you think it's held up, Sebastian?
The exact story that I told involved somebody that my mother's actually met, that the inspiration was that I was a co-host on a queer radio show in Hamilton, and the regular host of that show, when he was in high school, he was in the closet, he would go out to his car to listen to the local radio station there. So for about 4 years before he came out, he had at least somebody to listen to, and it was Matt. The idea of being that voice on the radio, and you don't have to do uplifting messages every week. You just have to be around. You have to be talking about LGBT stuff, and you have to be just normal people, ideally multiple people in conversation, because one person talking is one thing, but having different people, you can actually see how people interact with each other. You know, is there anything different in how we interact with each other? Generally speaking, no, we are just human beings who belong to the Western culture. There are a few things that are a bit different about how gay men interact with each other. And every so often people are like, you know, we can see this, like there are certain kinds of things that we find funny that most people would find crass. And there are certain things that most people find funny that we find crass. So, I mean, there's little differences like that. So just demonstrating, like, you know, making the world positive just by being, I think it's a very simple thing to do, but it's also very difficult because you have to put yourself out there. You reveal a lot about yourself. I mean, I've told a lot about my health. I'm sure there's some little granny out in the mountains of BC who knows all about my thyroid disease.
That's how I find out. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a weird thing, but it's very positive, because letting people know through exposure and demonstration, like little things like that go a long way. And I'm very happy to participate in that. And just letting people hear the disagreement you and I, where like we agree on 95% of things, and that 5% we don't agree on, how do we negotiate that? Like that's important for people to see what that looks like. I feel it was a very long answer to say yes, I agree.
No, I like it. Well, we are going to jump to the first song of the day. This is Broke Into Your Car, but it is a brand new track by Biff Naked. My favorite by her still remains Lesbians in the Forest. Everyone should look up Lesbians in the Forest. It is a fantastic track by Biff Naked. But this is Broke Into Your Car, the new track by Biff Naked. I want to take the chance right now to thank with all my heart the incredible Lynn and Jess for joining us, the OG Sebastian's mum, and our number one fan, Jess, as well. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining. And just after Biff Naked, we will be joined by Glenn from CFUV. We'll be back just after this.
I broke into your car last night to leave a piece of myself behind.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are here for our 200th episode. If you've been listening straight for 8 days, well done, you're at the end. We are syndicated from coast to coast, all across Canada, and everyone who is syndicating us and broadcasting us to the communities. We thank you, we love you, and Glenn is the station manager at CFUV in Victoria and in BC, and is joining us on the line now. Glenn, how are you?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be joining both of you here on your 200th episode. Congratulations, and thank you.
You are the station manager out in Victoria. So Glenn, as a station manager who actually syndicates our show, what was part of the decision-making in picking up CanQueer to broadcast to the community in Victoria, BC?
Okay. So first off the bat, I have to say that it wasn't my decision. I was lucky enough that when I showed up to start working at CFUV, it was already being syndicated. So I can't really speak to the individual decisions, but I can really thank the people who made that decision. Kudos to the likes of Johnny Regalado and Katie Sage for taking CanQueer up and realizing that there was a gap that CanQueer was helping us fill.
You know, for you as a station manager, looking to foster local talent and local folks to step up and take up that space, how does our show relate to that?
Oh, I mean, it's a pretty simple equation for us. Like you said, like whenever possible, we try to amplify a local voice, but sometimes a local voice needs a role model, you know, like that's really why when we're making decisions on who do we syndicate, what shows do we syndicate, we only try our best to find like the cream of the crop. And even then it's with the goal of like when we're in training with someone and somebody's expressed an interest in doing your kind of a show, a queer news program or a queer spoken word program, well, we have something that they can actually listen to and set themselves a benchmark against. So in that sense, you guys are actually like educators or mentors. And you might not even realize that you're mentoring a gay kid in the middle of nowhere, Alberta, but you might actually be doing that.
So one of the questions that, well, there were two questions that we asked our super fans earlier in the show. And I feel like maybe they were a touch on the bias side when it comes to an audience. And the first question was around, what do you think we do well? And I think we've touched on some of those parts in our conversation so far. One of the things that Sebastian mentioned earlier is that, you know, a real retrospective, you're looking back at where you went well and also where there's room for improvement. Now, we have heard occasionally from the broadcasters that carry the show that the technical quality of the show can sometimes be elevated. So I have kind of dreaded asking this of a station manager that carries the show, but where do you think that we can improve?
I'm a little bit different, I think, from some of the other folks in radio in that of course, the technical quality has to be valued. And of course, yeah, there are some minor areas that could maybe be a little bit more consistent. But for me, it's always been more about the person behind the microphone rather than technical proficiency. For me, where I think CanQueer could improve isn't necessarily in technical consistency, even though, yeah, you kind of could benefit from that. And you do, I'd say, a pretty good job at like recognizing that, you know, amongst the entire queer spectrum, two gay dudes is not necessarily reflective of everyone. And you recognize that, and that's a powerful thing to do. It means that you're a little bit more self-conscious and self-aware than some other people I might know. But that, I think, is always going to be room for improvement for any show that is trying to push these kinds of discussions. I think, you know, that doesn't necessarily only apply to your show. I think that applies to any show that is talking about as broad of a vehicle as, I mean, the acronym continues to grow, awareness continues to grow, different ideas and different subcultures continue to grow. So, you know, if you're looking and you're promoting yourself as a queer voice, well, that's a big voice. That's a big spectrum to represent. And that's always going to be room. I feel like you're never going to be 100% satisfied with it, but you're always going to be pushing to improve there. And that's all that I, as someone who listens to the show and someone whose station carries the show, that's really all I'm looking for.
It's a really big tent that we're talking about, you know, and in this tent, there are you know, bi folks, trans folks, queer folks, non-binary folks. There was an amazing non-binary discussion on UK Drag Race this past week that's been highly applauded. And I think that actually to pick up on this UK Drag Race conversation with like Ginny Lemon, I think those conversations are most powerful and most authentic when people are speaking from their own experiences. You know, me and Sebastian can certainly talk to our experiences, you know, growing up queer and growing up gay and challenges that we faced here and there. But I think that we've always stayed away from speaking too much to the trans experience or speaking to folks who are people of color or bi, because we just don't have that lived experience.
That's the self-awareness that I find really, like, that's where you're being self-aware and conscientious of your experiences. And I think, you know, like, the way that it could improve isn't necessarily in you guys talking about those issues, because like you said, it's not your issue to talk about, or you could talk about it, but it's at a very superficial level versus the real lived experiences. But that's where, you know, I think more and more people are recognizing that they can use the platforms that they've built, the privileges that they've gained, the audience that you've grown and cultivated to elevate somebody a little newer, a little younger. And that's also difficult because you want people to end up empowered and able to function and able to push the conversations on their own without you needing to steward it. And it's a very tricky balance to find.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, first of all, you and I barely even reflect gay men. But even on top of that, on the rare occasion when we do talk to other experiences, to, like, you know, bi folks or trans folks or gender nonconforming folks, we're always incredibly careful to hedge it. And we often, mostly we edit it out for the sake of time, but sometimes we leave it in because it's important. Where one of us will say, you know, well, like, bi folks say this, and the other one will call them out and say, well, you can't know that. Well, it's like, well, stats say bi folks say this, or the bi folks that I've spoken to have said this. And we tend to be very careful at hedging what we say within the fact that we're not those people. So how did we get that information? Are we outgoing? Do we speak to them? Did we read information? That kind of thing. And also acknowledging the fact that, like, no one group is a monolith. You know, you say, like, you know, trans folks hate this one particular public figure. Some people don't. Some trans people are like, well, you know what? She has the right to her opinion. We don't care. We still like her books. You know, they have the right to say that. So we're not going to talk about them as a monolith because that's just as crass as ignoring them. Quite frankly, I mean, we take that very seriously. We call each other out frequently, and only sometimes does it make it to air. Often we cut it out just because, you know, we're on a 58 minute format. We got an hour and 10 minutes. Something's got to go. That goes. Even from the experience of gay white men calling each other out frequently, saying, like, well, we can't say that about all gay white men. If we are flippant, it's because we're trying to be humorous, and I hope the joke lands.
Glenn, as a listener of the show, I'm kind of curious. We've been told by Sebastian's mum and by Jess earlier that we need more interviews. And apparently we have an anti-Manitoba bias. We're going to have to look into that. With those two things in mind, as a listener of the show, we are now 200 episodes in. Where do you think we should be going as we move forward?
I think I have to agree with Sebastian's mom.
That we have an anti-Manitoba bias?
Well, that, and I think, you know, like, it would be kind of cool to see you two, like, doing these kind of interviews more often. And I know that that's a lot more work in terms of coordination and, like, finding people to speak to certain different issues, whatever the issue at hand might be. That's a lot more work. But I think that's I'd be happy to listen to that. For sure.
Yeah, we will address our anti-Manitoba bias. We will take some HR courses related to it. We will work on that.
We'll watch an hour-long training video.
We will see some training videos about anti-Manitoba bias, and we will improve. But I think the nuts and bolts here is we recognize what our voices convey. We recognize where the authority and the privilege of where our voices come from. And I think that there is a need to have more voices on the floor, more different voices, voices with expertise that we can challenge and discuss with, and just sort of open up these conversations. So it's not just me and Sebastian as two talking heads, although that's great, but I think that there's definitely an impetus for us to bring in more guests.
I think it'd be valuable, but you know, it's at the end of the day, you know, you two have been doing this show for 200 episodes now, and if you found what you're happy with, then all the more power to you. And if you do find some way to increase the number of people participating in it, whether they're reporters or whether they're interviewees, whether they're experts or whether they're contributors, that's, you know, however you choose to do that, I think people would like that. I think people would see the value in that.
Give me a second.
Go away.
I thought my cat was a brat.
Oh man, I hope this is in the final cut.
Excuse me a second. Stupid cat.
You should leave the cat in there just the last couple seconds.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn, for adding to our conversation. I think the perspective of a station that's broadcasting us, it's an important piece of what we do. You actually had a music recommendation that we're going to play out the end of the show with. Do you want to let us know who it is and the song that you've put forward?
Yeah, so this is Kristen Witko with the song I'd Rather Be With You. Kristen is a pop artist from my hometown of Abbotsford, which is a small town in mentality, if not in terms of humans who live there. And, you know, Kristen's always been an inspiration for not being afraid to be queer and out in Abbotsford, BC, which takes guts that I don't have.
Well, we'll be back next week. I have an interview next week coming up with the authors behind the Out North book, an archival dive into Canadian queer history. That'll be the gist of our show next week. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian.
And our fantastic guest. Thank you all of you today for joining.
And thank you for listening.
At the time, I'd rather it be with you. Oh, so you shouldn't mind if I lay next to you.